Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the cookery writer Anna Del Conte. Her life, like her recipes, is a rich but healthy mix, rooted in the privileged pre-war traditions of a wealthy Milanese family. Yet it's the unexpected ingredients that bring real flavour. She's been machine-gunned and gone to prison twice. She describes spaghetti bolognese as American food, and despite being an inspirational figure to the likes of Nigella and Delia, has never had her own TV cookery show. She says, "I eat absolutely everything, from tripe to fish eyes and kid's head. But I'm not a gourmand. I think I am a gourmet." Right, Anna Del Conte, you have to define the difference then between gourmand and gourmet.
The gourmand for me is somebody that is just greedy and would eat anything that is on its plate with a sort of abandon, that I'm more choosy than that. And that to me is a gourmet. It's more choosy and it would eat with pleasure what is good.
One of the first things I understand that you cooked when you came to this country all those years ago was meatballs made out of horse flesh, is that right?
Yes.
You serve them to guests, did
yes.
you?
Yes, they didn't know.
They didn't know?
No, because if you mixed it with mortadella or salame, which you could buy, I mixed with egg and parmesan, you could buy all that, even if a lot of meat was still rationed. And then you fried them and perhaps you put them in tomato sauce. So obviously, nobody knew what sort of meat it was.
I'm imagining they said to you, "Oh, this is delicious," as you say, rationing was still the case. When they said it was delicious, did you enjoy the secret? Or did you want to tell them they were eating
horse meat? I'm afraid I'd never dare to tell them. I don't think they ever knew that they were eating horse.
How did your husband feel about eating horse meat? Did he
know? Oliver was very good. He ate anything. Yes, of course. As long as I was cooking it, he was very easy. No, he didn't feel at all. No, of course not.
And as I said in the introduction, you're pretty game. You'll eat most things, even though it has to be good, the food that you're eating.
Yes.
Is there anything about British cuisine that you simply won't try, that you think is just too disgusting?
I tried everything. What I don't like, porridge is my fault. I just don't like it. I don't think there is a much of anything else that I positively dislike.
Being a Scot, I have to ask you, have you ever eaten haggis?
Yes, I have, and I like them. Oh, yes, but I like their offal. And even if they're mutton, I like them even more, as long as they're good.
You like haggis. We're going to get on very well if you like haggis. I myself love haggis.
Do you like tripe?
Yeah, well, do you know, tripe is the only thing I haven't tried.
Oh, well, you should.
Because I like offal, but I haven't tried tripe. It's the look of it.
Oh, well, don't look at it.
OK, I'll close my eyes and try it. Now, obviously, I've invited you here today to hear your Desert Island Discs, but I'm wondering what your Desert Island dish might be.
That's far more difficult. I haven't thought of it.
I'm going to ask you again at the end of the programme, then.
You have to think of it.
Not a trick, I'm just wondering. Let's then go to the music. Tell me about your first track and why you've chosen it today. What are we going to hear now?
Fabrizio De André was a great singer, and he composed the music, he wrote his lyrics, he played classical guitar very well, and he sang. And he was compared to Bob Dylan, and quite a lot of people say that if he were English, he would have been far more famous than Bob Dylan. And my children, my sons, which were in their early teenage then, they were always listening to either the Beatles or Fabrizio De André. And I was cooking at the sound of Fabrizio De André, which I loved too.
La chiamavano bocca di rosa, metteva l'amore, metteva l'amore. La chiamavano bocca di rosa, metteva l'amore sopra ogni cosa. Appena scesa alla stazione del paesino di Sant'Ilario, tutti s'accorsero con uno sguardo che non si trattava d'un missionario. C'è chi l'amore lo fa per noia, chi se lo sceglie per professione. Bocca di rosa nell'uno nell'altro, lei lo faceva per passione.
That was Fabrizio De André and Bocca de Rosa. I want to ask you about when you arrived in Britain. You were in your mid-20s, around about 24, was it?
I was 24.
You arrived at, was it Victoria Station?
Yes, the train from the continent arrived at Victoria Station.
What were your very first impressions of Britain as you arrived? Can you remember?
No. Frankly, no, because I was looking for my host and I saw him and he was a very typical British gentleman, I thought. He was wearing a pinstripe blue suit with a bowler hat.
I'm so pleased.
Well, we are talking 1949.
Of course, yes. And you had arrived to learn English as an au pair.
As an au pair, yes. Okay. I was an au pair there and I was very lucky. It was a lovely family.
What did you make of the character of the English? I mean, I imagine, and you say it was 1949, and there's the gentleman meeting you with the pinstripe suit and the bowler hat on, and it's a different character from the Italians.
Well, you know that somehow it wasn't such a surprise. They had a stiff upper lip, but I was expected all that. It wasn't a surprise. There was a different thing. Certainly, like sending their children to boarding school when they're the age of seven, which I couldn't possibly have done, or having, you know, children in the sitting room only from 5 to 6 or whatever it was. There was a difference, and yet somehow I didn't find it that it worried me in the least.
Can you remember some of your early food experiences in England when you arrived?
I was very lucky.
Right.
Because Kitty Sevilla Hill, my hostess, was quite a good cook, and she managed to do something miraculous with the food that England had in 49. They had a very big vegetable garden, so that was all right. There was a fishmonger, which was very good. Well, the meat was scarce, but, I mean, it didn't matter. There was rabbits, and we ate rabbits.
What about your beloved olive oil? Were you able to get hold of
no,
that?
I don't think there was olive oil. There was salad cream. No, there wasn't olive oil. I'm sure there wasn't olive oil. I'm sorry.
What did your beautifully educated palate make of salad cream?
Oh, I didn't like it.
But right.
I mean, but I prefer it to have it with my salad than just plain. I can't bear plain salad.
And you had come to Britain to learn English, yes, to work with this and live with this family and to be their au pair. Did you imagine that you might make your life in Britain? Or did
no.
you?
No. Of course not. No, to be honest, I wouldn't have liked the idea at the beginning.
Right.
Absolutely no.
We will find out, of course, that it was love that anchored you to Britain, but more of that in just a moment. For now, let's hear about your second piece of music, Anna Del Conte. What are we going to listen to now?
We are going to listen to an overture of the third act of Traviata, Verdi's Traviata.
And why have you chosen this particular
piece? I've chosen this because, to start off, it reminds me of my poor mother. At a performance of La Traviata at La Scala, we had a box which was straight above the timpani and the drum and so on, and she had some chocolate on the parapet, and somehow she must have moved them, and they all went ding dong boom on the timpani and the drum, and Toscanini looked up at her for what she said was an eternity, and the message came back from the maestro through a mutual friend that the maestro would be very appreciative if Signora Del Conte would desist to make her contribution to a musical soiree. And then it would remind me of a lot of evening during the last year of the war, which were not very funny. And we were all blacked in the house. From the winter was terrible. And there was nothing to do but to listen to opera. And my father loved Traviata and any Verdi. And to huddle around the radio to listen to the BBC, which was the only news we could have, because all the other news were obviously censored and we only heard what the fascists want us to hear.
Thank you.
That was the overture to the third act of Verdi's La Traviata, played by the Orchestra of La Scala Milan, conducted by Arturo Toscanini. That was a 1951 performance there, Anna Del Conte. And you met Toscanini later, is that right?
Yes. I mean, meet is the wrong word. I just saw him and he said, "Che bella bambina," what a pretty girl. But that was all.
That's pretty good, better than most of us get. Tell us then about this family of yours. You were living in Milan. What was your father in business? What did he do? What was his job?
My father was a stockbroker, came from quite a bourgeois family. And so did my mother, who came from, a more aristocratic background.
What was your mother like?
My mother?
Yes.
She was quite beautiful, in fact. She was not, I can't explain, she was not exceptionally warm to us, but she was a very good mother. In spite of not being warm, she loved us, she cuddled us, but at the same time, there was a certain coolness in her.
Was she afraid slightly of spoiling you or making you...
Oh, certainly she was afraid of making me vain. She never said how good I was, how pretty I was, how intelligent I was, nothing. My generation were never praised, just in case we should become vain, and vain was the worst sin that you could possibly commit.
What about you with your children then?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Even I, far less than my daughter. My daughter keep on saying how beautiful they are, how clever they are. Fine, I agree. I would agree. But there are limits. They can't all be beautiful and clever.
And was your mother a cook?
Oh, yes. A very good cook. We had a cook, which was Maria, which was my great friend. But my mother was in charge and she did quite a lot. And don't forget that the Italians do not like novelties in their food. They like the same thing made better and better, the same old ragu, bolognese sauce, and making better and better.
Since you mentioned bolognese, let's just take a minute to talk about it. There is huge controversy in Britain about what goes into a proper bolognese sauce. What would you put in yours?
Well, I certainly would put beef. Maybe I put a little pork with it, and certainly oil and butter to start off in a soffritto, which is the fried mixture of onion and celery and garlic. And then you mix it and then you add the meat. And then you add wine, a little bit of stock or milk. And then you add your squeeze, tomato squeeze.
Puree.
Or you add your tin of chopped tomatoes.
And whatever you do, you don't serve it with spaghetti.
No.
That's ridiculous. No. What do you serve it with?
Well, traditionally, it was born in Bologna and they had it in tagliatelle.
Right.
Or with penne, but not with spaghetti. They are the wrong shape.
I have learned my lesson. Tell me about Maria, your family cook then. Did you sit up on the worktop as Maria was cooking and watching?
Yes, she was obviously a very nice person to children. Both my older brother and I loved her, adored her, in fact.
Did Maria sing, was it communist songs?
Yes, I still remember. I knew Avanti a Popolo alla Riscossa, camicia rossa, red shirt. I knew it from her. And that was, I must have been Danish, sort of.
Did your mother know she was teaching you
yes.
this?
Yes, she knew that we knew that we shouldn't talk about it.
Tell me about your next piece of music. Not a communist song. What are we going to hear?
We're going to hear not at all a communist song, but Boccherini Minuet.
Why have you chosen this?
Because it will bring me to another island, an island full of people and chatters, and that is Venice, which I adore. And the background in Venice, when you walk, there is always Boccherini or Vivaldi.
Thank you.
Boccherini's Minuet from the string quintet in E, played by I Musici. So, Anna Del Conte, you've said that as a child you were a bit of a fussy eater, but the things that you did like included truffles, brains, sweetbreads, squid and octopus. Now, that is awe-inspiring, a jaw-dropping list for those of us as parents who struggle just to get our children to eat broccoli. You were clearly very adventurous from a young age.
No, I don't think I was adventurous. I just liked it.
But quite a sensual, quite a big
yes,
taste for a child.
Yes, it's extraordinary for a child. That yes. I agree. Yes. But as far as the other one, certainly not the awful thing. Perfect, you're right. Tender and soft brains and the sweet bread and a lovely, delicate flavour.
And what about shopping for food in Milan? Because even now, if you buy a slice of ham in Italy, somebody will tie a bow around it. I mean, the whole thing is a real theatrical, beautiful experience. What are your memories as a small child?
I went shopping very often with my mother. We lived in a smart part of Milan, and we went in Via Monte Napoleone, which is now full of Prada and Armani. But at the time, it was the Becca, the salumeria, the delicatessen, the butcher and all this.
This rather idyllic-sounding life then came to an abrupt end because when you were 15 years old, war broke out. You ended up having to flee to the hills. Tell me what happened. Tell me more about that.
We entered the war in 1940, and for 2 years it was all right. Then the bombing started much, much heavier. So everybody was leaving the city, and we went to this place near Parma, and in the hill, and we were there for the last 2 years.
Tell me about the time then that the path in front of you was machine gunned. What happened? How did it happen?
Nothing could move on the road apart from military truck and jeeps and things like that. We were on the bicycle, but there was a donkey's pull cart in front of us. So I was bicycling away and with my friends, and the aeroplane came down, and thank goodness I threw myself in the ditch, and so did my friend, because the donkey, which was only 5 meters in front of us, was killed. And obviously, I was still here.
Yes, terrifying, though. Were you terrified at the time, or did you have the sort of innocence
of youth?
Well,
you have no time to be terrified.
Right.
You just time to think that, to save yourself.
Those years then, 17, 18, 19, mostly those are the years, of course, when people start to have the fun in their life. They start to dress up, they go out to dances, they're listening to music.
Nothing. Nothing about that. No, absolutely nothing. There were also very few men around, apart from the fascists and the Germans. No, carefree days I didn't have.
Did you resent that at the time? Did you know you were missing it?
No, you couldn't. There was a war, and you had only one thing in mind, to get on with it. Yes, quite.
Let's have some more music then. What are we going to hear now?
Well, now we are going to hear Chante René, Que reste-t-il de nos amours. All through the war, Mussolini didn't allow us to hear any American, English, French music. So suddenly, when the war was over, we discovered Bing Crosby, Chante René, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, all these people. So Chante René was one of my favourite, and I think I would like to hear it on your island.
Que reste-t-il de nos amours? Que reste-t-il de ces beaux jours? Une photo, vieille photo de ma jeunesse. Que reste-t-il des billets doux, des mois d'avril? Des rendez-vous, un souvenir qui me poursuit sans cesse.
That was Charles Trenet and Que reste-t-il de nos amours, What Remains of Our Love. So, Anna Del Conte, I did of course say in the introduction that you went to prison, and I haven't yet asked you about your time in jail. What happened?
Well, perhaps I should say that I was arrested. Because
right.
In prison I was only, well, once, I presume, 4 or 5 hours each time.
Okay.
The first time was rather unpleasant because I was bicycling very late, just before the curfew. So they brought me in. I was in the nasty commissario, chief of police. Very unpleasant. And he ate all my salame. My salame. I wasn't afraid, but I was, well, not unpleasant. And then the second time was when the family I was with was arrested because of the husband of the father was obviously in the blacklist of the fascists. Well, my father and I were left out after 4 or 5 hours when they saw that there was nothing to do with us. By then it had become very difficult life, frankly.
What do you think your parents wanted for you then, as a young teenage girl embarking on your own life, making your own decisions?
Oh, to marry a rich man and be happy ever after, with lots of children, which, well, I presume I did partly, but not totally.
Yes, you said to marry a rich man. You didn't say to marry an Italian man. Tell me about...
Well, I presume. Yes. They thought that I would marry an Italian man because it was the normal thing to do. It just happened that I didn't.
Tell me about how you met Oliver. When did?
Oh, it was a very unorthodox meeting. We met outside Westminster Abbey, and Oliver was going home. His parents lived behind the abbey. And we met, and our eyes crossed, and le coup de foudre. So he followed me. And then eventually, in the cloister, he approached me and he said, "What a beautiful place." And I burst out laughing because I thought, you know, after having followed me for 5 minutes, he could have come out with a less banal opening. And then we start talking and that's it. And on. And I asked, "Do you know any Italian?" And he said, "Only La ci daremo la mano," which is that wonderful piece of the duet between Don Giovanni and Zerlina. And I would take that.
You describe it as a coup de foudre. You already knew you were in love with him, did you? You knew that he...
Yes, I presume so. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I was I knew I liked him.
Let's hear your piece of music then. You've told us a little bit about it, but is this really for Oliver, this next piece of
yes,
music?
Yes, it would remind me of our first meeting and how fun it was.
Was Teresa Barganza and Ruggero Rimondi and La ci darem la mano. There you will give me your hand from Mozart's Don Giovanni with the Paris Opera Orchestra conducted by Lauren Mazel, and that was for your husband, the memory of meeting Oliver. You had this very long and enduring relationship. I was very surprised in reading some of what you've written that it wasn't always a smooth relationship, Anna del Conte. You did throughout your marriage have, was it more than one affair or you...
But 55, 56, whatever they were, years is a long time.
A long time.
I don't know if it ever was, is a marriage that can be smooth at that length. But, I mean, I was very happy the whole time, and so was he.
But both of you managed to endure these rocky patches. So loyalty was the most important thing, and you're sharing the family. And
yes, but I think it was our generation. It wasn't just me personally or him personally. It was our generation that we would think twice before sacrificing the family.
And throughout your long marriage, he was your chief taster then, Oliver was the one, was he who always would taste
and
the dishes?
And a good taster, because he had a very British palate, and yet he enjoyed good food. He would tell me what I would expect my reader would feel.
What do you make of the incredible journey that we have made with food over the last few decades, a journey that you and people like Elizabeth David and Jane Grigson were at the centre of helping people to understand that food is not just a duty, it's not just fuel, but there is great joy in it, and it is something, that round-the-table thing with the people you love is a great uniting force.
When I came to this country, you didn't discuss food. Food was something that you ate, and you never talked about food. I remember we went to Italy once with my husband. We went down to the Riviera, and he was amazed, because what we did when we were having lunch, was thinking where we would have dinner. I'd only know one thing, that is, now the food in this country is far better. Even in the 80s, far better. There is better food around.
And of course you have played your part in that. I wonder if you started off with a sort of missionary zeal. Did you think, yes, I'm going to convince them that actually there's a lot more to pasta than spaghetti hoops?
I'm not the missionary type. I started off, well, now that you put it, why should I have started off otherwise? My brothers and a friend of mine said, why don't you write a book about pasta? Not going to be a recipe, you've got to write a book on pasta altogether, the shapes, the history, everything that you could find. So it was wonderful because I had to research.
It was 1976 and the book was Portrait of Pasta. What did people think of it? Were people
it was quite successful, yes. I think. I'm sorry, but I...
You wouldn't be here if it hadn't been, let's be honest.
Sorry, but...
Let's have some more music then, Anna. What are we going to hear now? We're on disc number 6.
Now we are going to listen to Bing Crosby, because that's another one that we could listen after the war at last.
I never realized that such a thing could be. But when you went away, dear, then I was sad, because I never realized what a fool I was.
That was Bing Crosby and I Never Realized. So, Anna Del Conte, you've written a series of very well-received books over the last, 30 odd years, and yet, like many of your contemporaries, you have not been on our television screens. Why not?
Well, I was tested, I think. First, it was a long time ago, and I failed it. I failed it. I wasn't good enough. Don't know what happened, but I certainly am not good on the box. I come out as a cold, distant person.
Didn't work.
No.
That's a curious thing, isn't it? Because your writing is so warm. I mean, when I'm reading your writing about food, I can almost smell the food coming off the page. You know, you write in such a rich style, but you weren't able to translate this.
No. To my camera, I think.
Do you regret that? Because obviously, of course, we all know that...
Of course
I do. Yes.
Yes, sorry. Of course I do. I would be rich by now.
And what about inspiring the likes of Delia and Nigella? Do they phone you up and ask you for tips for recipes? They say, I've tried this dish and it's not going right, Anna.
Well, Delia had a sort of rapport because I wrote a lot for her magazine. I saw a lot of her and then I did organise some dinner for her. It was a lovely time when I went to Italy and did article on the various regions of Italy, which I enjoyed very much, and we had dinner there. Nigella was just... I think partly because she came to very early on, when she was not yet writing writing in Vogue.
Yeah, she was a food columnist in
Vogue. That's right. Yes. And she came to one of my demonstrations and she came and said, I'm Nigella Lawson, et cetera, et cetera. And, she was such a lovely girl that I liked her from that.
What did your mother make of your career? Because bearing in mind that you had a cook at home to do the day-to-day cooking, and bear in mind that you say her hope for her, as many women of her generation, was that you would marry a rich man and have your family. Did she like the fact that you had a career, and did she think it was a good career?
I know from my younger brother that she was very proud of me. She told all her friends of my success and so on, but she never told me. She never said, well done for all your book and so on. Never. Because, again, it goes back to you never praise your children. Even I was by then 40-odd, and still I was her child.
Does that bother you that she never said, well done?
Yes. Mm. Yes, to be honest. But that is, something happened.
Let's have some more music then. What are we going to hear now at this number 7, Anna?
Number 7 is the Adagio from Haydn String Quartet. It was the chosen piece of music that Oliver had at his funeral. He prepared all his music, all the reading and everything. It was a beautiful spring day and we had a lovely party, what do you call it, a wake. And that was played in that beautiful church where he was buried in Fontbellemagna in Dorset, where I'm living now.
Thank you.
That was the Amadeus String Quartet playing the Adagio from Haydn's String Quartet No. 2 in C major. So, Anna Del Conte, you are the mother of three children and you live close to one of them. You live close to your daughter.
Yes, to Julia.
How does that arrangement suit you?
Oh, it suits me very well. You must ask her if it suits her as well. But it suits me very well because I got the children coming in and out. It's rather lovely. It's not. There is no more loneliness.
Yes. Your husband Oliver died in 2007. And I wonder if you feel yourself sort of pulled back to Italy at all by the fact that you don't have that anchor here now. Oliver is no longer here.
No. I mean, I've always been a person that had two anchors.
Right.
One was Italy and the other was in England. I never felt at home in either country anymore. When I'm in one country, I think I would rather be in the other one and vice versa. But I become a hybrid.
You've also said that much of life now is about the three S's, silence, solitude, and now I'm going to make a muck-up of pronouncing this, stanchezza.
Well done.
Right. Stanchezza means what?
It means tiredness. In fact, I do find that because of working, I don't feel that so much. I think stanchezza is a feeling of not particularly being very interesting in going on.
Right, it's a weariness with the idea of life itself.
Yes.
And so work helps to stave that off, does it?
Yes, work gives me that sort of sprint to be here again.
And tell me then, I don't know if you've had time amidst all our chat and the music to think about a desert island dish, but if there was just one one meal that you could take with you, can you think what that might be?
It seems very banal and so on, but I would have to have pasta.
Which one of all the hundreds?
Oh, I would have spaghetti al pomodoro.
Just tomato sauce on,
yeah.
Right.
Good tomato sauce and that's it.
Let's have your final piece of music. What are you going to choose?
Love duet in the first act of Otello, sung by Placido Domingo, please.
And why have you chosen this particular piece of music?
Because Otello is, I think, to me, is the perfect opera. And Domingo is the perfect Otello.
Is it true, Anna Del Conte, that you'd quite like to see Placido Domingo washed up on the shores of your island?
Yes, after a storm, and he will burst out in his magnificent Esultate, which is an extraordinary piece of music.
What a thought. Let's hear him now. Part of the love duet from the first act of Verdi's Otello with Placido Domingo and Mirella Freni with the opera of La Scala Milan conducted by Carlos Kleiber. So, Anna Del Conte, we come to the moment then where it's all about the books and the luxuries. I'm going to give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare and you may take one other book. What's it going to be?
Well, I've thought for a long time because when I first met Roy Plumley, he asked me that. I met him years and years ago and I say I was a fan of his programme.
This was at a party you met?
Yes. Yeah. And I said the Divina Commedia, Dante, because I never read it all properly and I would try to understand it all. But now I'm 85, I can't be bothered to understand it. I will not take Dante. I will take instead Il Gattopardo, The Leopard by Tomasi di Lampedusa, so that I will dream of being on another island, far more civilised than the desert one in Sicily.
Good idea. It's yours. And a luxury, of course. What's your luxury going to be?
Poppy, my dog?
No, not allowed.
I thought that. I'm sorry. Then a perennial supply of extra virgin olive oil, so that I could eat the roots, vegetables that I can find. I can even dress my fish if I can catch them.
It is yours, the extra virgin olive oil. And if I were to ask you to pick just one of the eight discs...
I think it would have to be Otello.
OK, the Otello is yours then. Anna Del Conte, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
Thank you very much for asking me.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.